from a slightly snowy Seattle, Washington. Welcome to the Fretboard Journal podcast number 127. Thank you for tuning in. Thank you for subscribing to us via iTunes. Up until now, Brazilian was really the only rosewood folks worried about when it came to CITES and buying, selling, and crossing the border with your instruments. But if you have been on any of the guitar forums recently, you may have read about an update that recently passed that put all forms of rosewood, as well as Bubinga, on CITES Appendix 2. So what does this all mean? I know a lot of builders, collectors, and dealers, pretty much the same people who listen to this podcast, are asking that question. Rosewood, of course, appears on so many acoustic and electric instruments, both old and new. I also know this is new territory for a lot of us. Most of us don't have passports for our guitars right now, or even a ton of paperwork on where our instruments came from, whether they were built by a luthier or even a factory. So with that in mind, today we're doing a quick podcast with our own John Thomas, guitar and legal expert. We're going to talk about what these CITES updates mean for us in the real world. As always, John is great about demystifying all the long documents and rumors and telling us like it is. I hope you enjoy it. We have links in both our podcast description to some of the papers and presentations mentioned here that can be found on both iTunes as well as on fretboardjournal.com. I want to wish luthier T. Drew Heinonen a heartfelt congratulations. Drew, of course, built us an amazing guitar that we unveiled at the Fretboard Summit, and he has been on this podcast many times. He is now a proud new dad. He has a baby boy. I hope he's getting a little bit of sleep these days. I hope he's figuring out how he's going to balance being a dad as with building guitars again, because he built us a gorgeous Koa and Lutz OM style guitar. We're going to actually make next week's podcast the conclusion to the Fretboard Summit guitar build, and follow up with Drew and tell him our thoughts about the instrument and a lot more. But if any of you are ever near Seattle, you should check out this guitar. It is very cool, and we'd be happy to let you see it and play it. I also want to add, we're talking to another talented young luthier about a podcast build series, perhaps on building an electric guitar. So if you have any wild ideas about what you think we should order, drop me a line. Please don't tell me an all-parts Telecaster. That would be rather boring. Let's make it interesting. Let's make it fun. I also want to thank everybody who's been placing orders for both our new issue with Nels Klein on the cover, as well as for gift subscriptions and gift orders in general. We actually brought on a little part-time help to help us meet all of our orders and turn them around quickly. So now is the perfect time to be a part of this reader-supported magazine. You can subscribe, obviously, online at fretboardjournal.com or place a gift order. You can also call us at 877-373-8273 and place an order that way. If you do it via the phone, there's about a 1 in 5 chance that I will be the guy who picks it up, and you'll have to talk to me. I don't know if that's a bonus or a detriment, but give it a shot. TR Crandall is once again our sponsor for this podcast. They literally, just like an hour ago, posted on their Instagram page a 1945 Gibson L5 that looks amazing. They also have a Saul Cole Duo Glide with triple Curtis Novak pickups that looks insane. If you want an older guitar with triple pickups, they have a 1959 Gibson Les Paul Custom with triple PAFs. They have so much fun stuff. They also have a tremendous selection of vintage Gibson and Martin acoustics, of course, amps, and a lot more. They are throwing a holiday party December 20th, so if you're anywhere near New York City, you should go. That's TRCRANDALL.com. Please tell them the Fretboard Journal sent you. And once again, here we are with John Thomas, the author of Kalamazoo Gals, the Fretboard Journal field editor, and the law professor. I tried to pose as many questions as I could to John that I thought you might want to ask, but if I missed anything, and I'm sure I did, drop me a line at jason@fretboardjournal.com. I'd be happy to get some answers for you. Obviously, I know we're all on high alert these days, but if you are a guitar guy who doesn't take your guitars out of the country, doesn't plan on selling anything anytime soon, and you're just having fun with your guitars or fretted instruments, you don't need to do anything. You can relax. But if anyone's thinking about selling anything anytime soon, if anyone's a luthier or thinking about buying a guitar from a perhaps overseas luthier, you might find this informative. I hope you do. And without further ado, here's John Thomas. All right, John Thomas, I feel like we have this call every year, maybe twice a year, trying to get people up to date on CITES and LACI Act developments. The big CITES news is obviously Rosewood right now. Do you want to explain to folks listening what exactly was announced and what is going to happen, I guess?
Yeah, I guess to start with, we can note that Rosewood is the most trafficked bit of wildlife, whether measured by volume or money. So it's over a third of all illegally trafficked wildlife items, whether it's rhino horns or elephant tusks or snakes or whatever, Rosewood is number one.
Wow.
And it's gotten so bad in recent times that China, in the last half of 2016, has been importing 350 Rosewood logs per hour.
Wow.
Per hour. Yeah, so the Rosewood forests are being threatened. There were only about 8 of the total 304 species of Rosewood, Dalbergias, on any of the CITES lists prior to the Conference of the Parties. This is the 17th Conference of the Parties that happened in Johannesburg, South Africa in September and October. And one of the problems with detecting whether Rosewood is illegal is roughly nobody can tell, at least at the border, one Rosewood species from another. I can't. You know, I could be fooled from some Brazilians versus others. I think some people are more sophisticated than I. But when you get down to very similar-looking species without doing genetic testing, you can't tell.
Yeah.
So the Conference of the Parties decided the easiest thing to do to make sure that the threatened rosewoods don't sneak through under a label of some other kind of rosewood is to put the entire genus of Dalbergia, all 304 species of rosewood, onto Appendix 2 of CITES, requiring permits for any international travel with this stuff.
All right. So folks are freaking out. I've heard from collectors. I've heard from luthiers. I've heard from dealers. How does this – let's start at the most common thing. How does this affect a guy who has a new or old guitar with rosewood of any sorts? You know, day-to-day, living in America, if they never leave the country, they're fine, right?
Right. It only affects you if you go across an international border. And the worst-case scenario is you have to get a permit. And the worst-case scenario getting a permit is somewhere between 45 and 90 days. So in the U.S., doesn't matter, within your country, wherever you are, if you aren't going across international borders with your rosewood guitar, you're fine. If you cross an international border, again, the worst possible case scenario is you need to get a permit. So let's talk, I guess, initially from the traveling musician's perspective,
yep,
and then let's move into luthiers and that sort of thing. Folks probably know when we have an online How Do You Do It piece on how to get the musical instrument certificate, or what is conventionally known as a passport. So CITES folks, the last meeting of the Conference of the Parties, so 3 years ago, the CITES folks created this thing called a musical instrument certificate or passport. I got, as far as I know, the very first one and have been traveling with one. So if you have an instrument with rosewood, before if you had an instrument with Brazilian rosewood, you wanted this passport. Now any kind of rosewood, you probably ought to go ahead and get the passport. It's a pretty easy process. It lasts 3 years. You go online, find the documents, download them. Now, turns out the U.S. Fish and Wildlife has not moved into the 21st century. They only deal with snail mail. You have to mail it in and send a check or money order. No electronic payment. So that's a problem. So that has been in effect for 3 years now. At least the initial procedures were in effect, and each country implemented them more slowly. So we've had it up and running a couple years here in the States. One of the problems with that, though, if you look at the regulations in the U.S. and other countries, you have to go in and out of designated ports. Ah, you say designated ports. Yeah. So if your instrument has a bit of some kind of animal on it, which could be pearl, you'd have to go out of 112 designated ports. If it just has plants, and for reasons I don't know, cow bone is not counted as an animal, so I guess you can count that as a plant. There are 36 choices. But you also would technically have to get the instrument inspected. Now, let me step back. I've had a permit, a passport. I've been traveling throughout. I've been over to Europe several times, down to South America with a guitar. I have actually never gone to the designated ports. Well, I've gone to sometimes designated ports, but I've never gotten the inspections because it's way too hard. It takes way much too much time. And that's cumbersome. I just keep my passport in my case, and no one ever looks. That said, there was a resolution this year. So, again, we're talking traveling musicians. A resolution that the parties passed to eliminate the requirement that you have to go get an inspection, that you have to have it inspected, your instrument inspected and the passport stamped at every single border crossing. The resolution meant that the party simply embraced it. You have your passport with you, and if anybody ever asks to see it, you show it. So, number one is if you have an instrument with any of the listed species and you travel with it personally, it's best to get the passport. There also, if you don't have a passport, there also is a personal effects exception that should cover your instrument, but 187 out of the 195 countries in the world have signed CITES, but all of them recognize the personal effects. And for the U.S., for instance, personal effects does not apply to Appendix 1 items. On a guitar, the only Appendix 1 items would be Brazilian rosewood, ivory, and hawksbill sea turtle, tortoiseshell, as we typically call it. So if you have any of those on your instrument, you need the passport anyway. And beyond that, a lot of countries don't recognize just personal effects, so you need to get the musical instrument certificate. So if I've got an instrument, I'm going to travel with it as anything resembling rosewood, I just get the passport. It takes, had been taking around 45 days or so. You apply ahead of time, get it, you're set. Goes for 3 years, and you can keep renewing it every 3 years if you want.
And what do they actually ask for when you fill out this passport application?
So you need to identify your instrument by description and submit a photograph, and then you need some indication of why it's legal. So I travel with an old guitar, but mine's an old battered Gibson, 1943 or so. Gibsons are hard to tell.
Yeah.
And it went through World War II. It's beaten and battered, and there's no identifying number on it. So I simply submitted information that described it, articulated why it was easily identified as that old, and U.S. Fish and Wildlife supported that. Fish and Wildlife has conducted two webinars in the last 3 days, one yesterday, one day before, in which they've said one thing that they will rely on is a certified appraisal. So if you have questions about the age of your guitar or the age of the wood in the guitar, get somebody in one of the major shops to assess it, write a little note. It probably would cost the same as these typical appraisals for value, and Fish and Wildlife will accept that. So you document how old it is, you document what's in it, you submit your information, passport comes in the mail, and you stick it in your guitar case.
And what do you do if you've bought a relatively recent luthier-built guitar where you may not have the paper trail of where Luthier X bought his Indian rosewood?
So there you have some issues, right?
Okay.
But the issue is it has to be pre-convention. Now, for pre-convention for Brazilian rosewood, the rosewood has to have been cut down from the wild pre-1992 or have been certified to have been cut down. Sometimes folks have claimed they found old timbers in churches and such in Brazil that were cut down before 1992, and the trees were cut down. The timbers are removed post-1992, and they get paperwork from Brazil. Not always legally, I think, but anyway. For Indian rosewood, the new provisions for CITES go into effect January 2nd, 2017, and Fish and Wildlife said they expect compliance by that date. So if your guitar is built before January 2, 2017, you're fine. You can get your permit, but you'll have to have your luthier sign a document. Probably notarized is best. We have this notion in the United States if someone gets a little seal out and signs and stamps the paper after you sign it, that it means you haven't lied. So a notarized statement by a luthier would suffice, I'm confident.
All right. This is going to pose a challenge for some folks if your luthier's not around anymore or reclusive or whatever. But I got to ask, you've traveled a bunch with this passport. Do you always show it, or do you sometimes leave it in the case just to see if they're going to ask for it?
I have never shown it. No
okay.
One's ever asked for it. But I carry it as sort of a protection, if you will. And I also wanted to go through the process for the Fretboard Journal readers to show them how to do it and show how to get a passport. But I haven't necessarily gone through designated ports. Typically I do, but I don't always. So if you fly from Bolivia and land in Idaho is not a designated port. You need to go through New York or L.A., one of the 12 designated ports. And I also haven't asked for inspection. So I have complied in spirit but not in letter. I've never had any problem. But I think the reason I've never had any problem is only 8 rosewoods were listed on any of the CITES provisions, only Brazilian on the Appendix 1. And so, by and large, the odds were that the guitar didn't contain anything listed in CITES. Now that every rosewood is listed in CITES, I think we'll see more inspections. So I would encourage people to get the passport. It's going to take a little while. Fish and Wildlife have confessed that they're not sure whether they're staffed enough for what will likely be a rush to get permits of all kinds prior to January 2nd of this coming year. So if you're thinking of traveling, apply early and often. It's just like voting. Early and often always works. And I would apply and do that. And then feel relatively assured with this new resolution that you don't need to have inspections and get it stamped. You just have to have the passport with you and reveal it when someone requests it.
Okay. And do you know a lot of people who have these passports? Do you know a lot of folks who've taken the time to do it?
No, I don't. I know some classical musicians have. I don't know any of us subclassical steel string players but me who've gotten one.
Yeah.
I do think there will be a move to do that because of this, but I have not met any other steel string guitar player who has one.
I'm just curious, maybe somebody listening to this, if you've applied for one, if there's ever been any like pushback or questions. I'm curious how diligent they are when they read over these applications.
Yeah, I think that'd be good to know. And I can repeat that my guitar is old and faded and battered enough that there's no identifying information, no serial number or in Gibson parlance, factory order number, and I still got the passport. So I think that Fish and Wildlife are willing to work with individual guitar players. I know they say they are, and they have been helpful to me, so I'm pretty confident that people won't have problems. And so that solves the issue if you are traveling with your guitar. If you're traveling with your guitar, you get the certificate, if it has any kind of rose with the passport, and you're fine.
Yeah. Now, it did say there was some nomenclature that you could have one personal instrument. I think I saw that in the Fish and Wildlife PowerPoint. You'd still recommend folks carry a passport for that instrument?
I would. So the Fish and Wildlife have recognized the two exemptions. One is this passport. If you have the passport, that's good. The other is you don't necessarily need a passport if you come within the personal effects exemption. And that's only if it doesn't have Appendix 1 items, no Brazilian or ivory or hawksbill sea turtle. If it has any of those three items, you need a passport. If it doesn't have those, typically the personal effects exemption, just stuff you're carrying with you, would cover it. But a number of countries don't recognize that. And China, Japan, and Russia are among those, the countries that don't recognize the personal effects exemption. So I guess two bits of advice. One, I think the passport's the way to go. But if you don't have the time or you don't have the inclination to do that, go to the CITES website and check which countries recognize the personal effects exemption that would exempt an instrument you're carrying if it's within your personal luggage. And you won't need a passport unless you go into some countries that don't recognize that.
Okay. All right. So if I want to go skiing at Whistler this weekend up in Canada and I want to bring a guitar, I'd probably be okay with the personal effects thing.
Canada recognizes the personal effects as long as you don't have any of the Appendix 1 items, Brazilian or ivory or tortoise on it, you're fine. It covers other, it doesn't cover Appendix 1, it covers Appendix 2 and 3. So if you have Appendix 1 stuff, Brazilian or ivory or hawksbill sea turtle, you got to have your passport. If it doesn't have those, in most countries, including Canada, you're fine with the personal effects exemption.
Okay. Let's move down the list, I guess.
Well, let me add one thing. So
okay.
What if you want to ship your guitar ahead of yourself, right? You're going
sure.
to, I don't know, a trip, or you want to use it while you're in Europe or whatever you want to do. You're going to ship your guitar, but you're not going to sell it. That's a non-commercial shipment. And the new CITES listings have an exemption for a shipment of non-commercial use. You're not going to sell it. You're just going to ship it ahead of yourself. I know people have done this to go to workshops and that sort of thing, right? Sometimes festivals.
Sure. Got a Mark Leaf case you don't want to haul on a plane. Yeah.
Right. You ship it. So there's an exemption for shipments, non-commercial, up to 10 kilograms, or roughly 22 pounds. There's a problem with what that means. Fish and Wildlife interpret that to mean that it's 22 pounds of whatever the listed species are. So as long as your instrument doesn't have 22 pounds of rosewood, not one of those old Fender George Harrison era tellies, right, the rosewood tellies that I think might have pushed the 22
pounds. It's coming close, yeah.
Right. You're fine. some of the Europeans in the discussion at the convention think that the 10 kilograms or 22 pounds constitutes a whole shipment. So your guitar and a Mark Leaf case probably exceeds a 22 pound.
Yeah.
It's pretty close, right?
Yeah.
So in the U.S., you're fine. You can ship it into the U.S. as long as what the rosewood or inside your instrument doesn't weigh more than 22 pounds. But if you're going to ship it to another country, you have to worry about that. So I think in the U.S. is fine. If you're shipping it to another country, probably get the permit anyway. You don't need it if it's 22 kilograms, 20 pounds or 10 kilograms, but nobody knows exactly what that means yet. So anyway, back. If you're carrying it with you, passport, if you have Appendix 1 Brazilian on it, you can rely on a personal effects exemption if you're carrying it with you. Either of those work. Personal effects, not if you have Appendix 1. That's Brazilian or ivory or hawksbill sea turtle. And in addition, you can ship it if it's under 22 kilograms, probably of Brazilian rosewood in it. But there is some debate at this point what exactly that exemption means.
Okay.
So that covers the traveling musician.
Yeah.
And the next thing is, what about luthiers?
Okay, yeah.
And these would be luthiers either importing or exporting woods. They could be completely unfinished raw woods. They could be partially finished products, necks or bridges or what have you. And they could be guitars themselves, because the guitars aren't going to be covered by this 10-kilogram exemption if you're shipping it for commercial purposes. And that's either to sell it or to display it at a show. That's okay. A commercial purpose. So they're not going to be covered by the passport or the personal effects exemption or the one exclusion for the 10-kilogram shipment. They got to get permits. Now, the three items we've talked about that typically occur on guitars that are in Appendix 1 of CITES. CITES has three appendices, 1, 2, and 3. That's in decreasing order of restriction. One, Appendix 1, for guitar playing purposes, Brazilian rosewood, ivory, or hawksbill sea turtle, you need all kinds of permits. You need an import permit, you need an export permit, import permit, and if it goes anywhere else, re-export permit. You'd have to have three permits if you wanted to ship an instrument from, say, Europe to the U.S. and then ship it on to Canada. You have to have import, export, import, and re-export, right?
Okay.
So you need permits for every border crossing, regardless of direction, if it has the Brazilian rosewood, ivory, or hawksbill sea turtle. Now, what's really at stake, though, is the new listing, and the new listing is rosewood of all kinds, other than Brazilian. Brazilian is Appendix 1. The other kind of rosewoods, every other species of rosewood, every other variety of Dalbergia, goes on to Appendix 2. Appendix 2 is less restrictive. You only need an export permit. Don't need import permits, just an export permit. So you want to get some rosewood from India, ship it from India to the U.S., you need an export permit from India, an import permit. If you have the wood here or a guitar here in the U.S., you want to ship it somewhere else, you need an export permit. But you're going to have to get them now. Right? Every single instrument you ship out, every single bit of wood you ship out, you're going to need an export permit. There's a bit of confusion because prior to this new act by the Conference of the Parties, Appendix 2 has not applied to finished goods. It's only applied to raw goods. Even semi-finished goods have been exempted by annotations. But the new annotation only exempts seeds, pollen, and fruit. So okay. If anything else, if anything bigger than a seed or I guess a fruit, there must be some kind of fruit on a rosewood tree. You have to get the permit. So even if it's a completely finished guitar, even if it's a semi-finished piece like wood sets or a neck rough out, you have to get the permit. And it has to be an export permit. It's going to take 45 to 90 days is what U.S. Fish and Wildlife has said historically. Lately, within the last year, they've issued permits faster than that. I'm confident, at least in the first part of the implementation of these new rules, it's going to take longer than that.
And does the permit cost money?
Permit costs money. Permit costs $75.
And it lasts for 3 years or the lifetime of the thing?
So you can have, there are two kinds of permits. There's an individual shipment, which is a $75 one time only, and there's a master file. So let's, if I have one guitar that I want to sell to somebody in another country, I'm just me, I just need the single permit. But if I'm a luthier, I might be selling guitars a lot. And that might behoove me, instead of getting the single permit, to get what's known as a master file. And that costs $200, and you can list on the permit everything in your shop. So I'm going to step back one time. If you get, I'm a single guy selling one guitar. I get my one-time permit to ship out the Rosewood guitar from here to wherever, as long as it crosses an international border. If I'm a luthier, this is my livelihood and my business. I'm going to be doing this off and on, and I don't want to have to get a permit for every single instrument. I can get a master permit, or what's called a master file, in U.S. Fish and Wildlife lingo, and I can list everything in my shop. Now, prior to this, the only thing you'd want to list in your shop would be Brazilian rosewood, because that's the only thing you needed a permit for. Now you need a permit for every bit of rosewood. So I would advise luthiers to do the master files, to catalog everything in their shop, get a permit for everything, and then they can send copies of that permit with guitars that they ship out made of that wood that they've had in their shop.
So the permit would literally say 32 pieces of Indian rosewood or something.
Absolutely.
Like that. Okay.
I'd have 32 pieces of Indian rosewood, 17 pieces of Pernambuco, 12 pieces of Brazilian rosewood. Yeah, exactly. And you can get a master file. Fish and Wildlife said if it gets too big, I can imagine, Taylor wandering in to get a single permit for everything in the shop.
Yeah.
It's too cumbersome for people to find the information. But a solo luthier, I think it would work. And I would advise people to do this because it's a one-shot only. You can send copies of it out as you go. Now, when you do that, though, we've got lots of folks with luthiers with stashes of wood.
Yep.
And most of them don't have any records from this, right?
Yep.
Too long ago, they acquired it before it was listed on Fridays. That's pre-1992 for Brazilian rosewood. That's pre-January 2, 2017 for Indian rosewood. They didn't worry about it because those you didn't need permits to ship Indian rosewood guitars at the time. You just lost your paperwork. You didn't keep it. So what Fish and Wildlife has said is you need to document that, and these appraisals would work and other kinds of proof. It's a question of law, so any kind of proof should be valid. The burden is on the luthier to demonstrate that the wood is legal, but notarized documents, I think, are going to be fine. And I would urge every luthier to catalog what you've got to the best of your knowledge. If you have documents, great. Not many people do. If you don't have documents, to the best of your knowledge, indicate where you got it, from whom you got it, and have your articulation of that notarized. And include that with your application, with your master file, to try to cover all the wood in your shop.
And then the master file, if you go to one of these guitar shows and buy some more wood, can you add to that original master file, or do you have to file a new one if you just bought another 20 sets?
Yeah, file a new one, right? It only covers what you've got today, so you file a new one.
Okay.
Exactly.
And if you are, some of the luthiers that we both know are some of the world's foremost experts on woods, you're not suggesting that a Kim Walker has to go to George Groon and get validated that he has Indian rosewood, are you? Or could he just write his own estimate and have it notarized?
Exactly.
Okay. Exactly.
And that's essentially what I did for my passport. I put in my passport application. I've been a guitar geek for a long time. I've written a lot of articles on this stuff. I actually wrote a book on old Gibsons.
Yeah.
And in my opinion, this is a 1943 Gibson, which is pre-1992, and Fish and Wildlife were fine with that. So it depends on who you are. But if you are in the business and you have the knowledge, it's absolutely fine. There's no legal requirement to get it notarized, but it's very helpful. I would advise luthiers to get it notarized. I would advise purchasers of instruments to get copies of the statements from the luthier so they have it with them if they ever need a passport or anything. The big deal is going to be to document, and we're sort of at ground zero, and I think luthiers amateur builders who have stashes of wood should document everything they've got, catalog it, get these master files, and so they can start from going forward here, assured that they've done their best to comply with the law. And Fish and Wildlife have been very reasonable in articulating what they're going to expect from people.
So as a buyer, you would go to the luthiery show or place your order and then just ask for a printout of the master file or maybe highlight the wood that was on your guitar.
Yep, photocopy of that page with a highlighter.
Exactly. All right, and then you're still not out of the woods. You still need to get a passport for yourself.
You need to get a passport if you're going to travel with it, but
yep,
it'll be easy to get if you've got the documentation from your luthier.
Okay. And then selling a guitar for a luthier who wants to, who's lucky and is getting orders from around the world, what do they need to do?
Well, they've got to get documentation for every bit of rosewood they've got in their shops. We know that there are lots of well-intentioned, great people who haven't been doing this because typically customs agents have not been bothering to look in cases because the only wood that might be on list was Brazilian rosewood, and there's there aren't that many guitars made out of it. But now that many, many guitars, a huge percentage of guitars, will be subject to CITES, I think the customs officials are going to start to look more carefully. So I would urge all those luthiers to do the proper documentation. If they're in the business, they have to do two things. They have to get a license to import and export, and then they have to get the permits. The information's right on the website for Fish and Wildlife. They're very, very helpful on the website.
All right. I guess we should move down the list to dealers, unless there's more to add for the luthiers.
No, I think it's going to there's going to be a rush at first. There's going to be some frustration and confusion because everybody's got to document everything, and there will be a learning curve for this. But I think in relatively short order, let's say 6 months or a year, everybody in the business is just going to include this as part of doing business, and I think it'll work relatively smoothly.
Yeah.
Now, for dealers, it's going to be the same thing. You're going to have a paper trail. So if you accept a guitar from somebody, you need to have the documentation, if it has rosewood, the documentation of where the rosewood came from and when you got it, so that you can get the proper permit to export that guitar if you want to export it. And I like to cite one of our favorite people in Fretboard Journal, and that's Mark Stutman at Fuquay Music, who does a lot of repair work and does a lot of sales internationally because he's in Canada and a lot of his clientele is in the States or other Europe and other places. And he has just mastered this. When a lot of other dealers have stopped shipping internationally, Mark has recognized that that's part of his business. If he doesn't ship internationally, he loses all of his business. And he's just done all the permitting all the time for Brazilian. He's just going to now have to do it for all of this rosewoods. But he has not had an issue with it. It's very easy to deal with him. It takes a little more time because he has to apply for the permits. But he's a person who can show that dealers can do this, and they're all going to have to do it. They've been hiding because only a certain part of their inventory, the little Brazilian bit, has been impacted. But now all the rosewood guitars are impacted. If you have any international travel, you got to get your import-export license from Fish and Wildlife, and then you've got to get your permits.
And if you have a store like Mark's or wherever, and sometimes inventory probably sits on the shelf for months or, sadly, maybe sometimes years, would you just get the permit the minute you took in the inventory and hold on to that in case you do get a sale? Or would you recommend that dealers wait till they have the sale and go for the permit?
I get it right away, right.
Okay.
I think you get it right away. I think it will speed up the process, and it'll be a selling point. Now, one problem with that is when you export, you have to indicate to where you're going to export it. So you may not know until if you can get permits, if you know you're going to ship them out to shops in other places, if you're one of the wholesaling or what have you. But the export permit requires a listing of you to whom you're exporting.
Okay.
It. You probably aren't going to be able to figure that out until you've got a customer.
Yeah. You can make a good guess, but yeah.
Right. We know some folks who buy a lot of guitars, you could just hope that they're going to buy them and put their names and addresses on it, but it might not work out.
Okay. Oh, you need the actual address too, not just the country?
Yeah, you need to indicate where you're shipping it.
Okay. So yeah, that is going to pose some problems. And the turnaround time on that permit is how long?
So Fish and Wildlife have been saying what they've always been saying is 45 to 90 days.
Okay.
In the last year, they've been under the 45 days. I think they're going to go over the 45 days with the rush to comply. And Fish and Wildlife don't actually know the demand for permits at this point because a lot of instruments are now included in the process that weren't before, and so aren't even sure whether they have the resources or personnel to do it. But they've been saying, we'll do our best, which is all we can hope for at this point.
Yeah. Anything else to add?
Well, I think, it's a new world in some ways. I've seen discussion online and through Facebook and such, friends of mine who are builders suddenly saying, well, I'm going to have to certify all that Brazilian rosewood. Well, you always were supposed to do that. So it hasn't changed with respect to that, but it has changed with respect to all the other rosewoods. But it's just part of the new world order, and I think people are just going to have to comply. From a perspective of a potential client, I would want to make sure that my shop or luthier complies because I don't want to risk the loss of the instrument. Now, I suppose the shop or the luthier could take a risk and just ship it without the paperwork, but I would want to make sure I didn't pay for it until I got it, because if it disappears, I don't want to have already paid for it, right?
One of those rare COD deliveries in the guitar world, yeah.
Right, exactly. So I think what's going to happen is so that business can continue is people are going to have to file the paperwork, but Fish and Wildlife have been very accommodating so far, conducting webinars. Their information has been really clear, I think, and pretty simple. They're a little fuzzy around some of the edges. They weren't aware of the recent changes to the passport regulation that allows easier use of the passport, but they have a lot on their plate. But, I mean, New World Order, everybody's going to have to sign up and get passports. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and USDA APHIS websites are very good. Fish and Wildlife are for animal life. USDA and APHIS are for plant life. Their websites are really good. The documents are easy to get, and we've got them listed in on our online pieces at FetBoard Journal as well. So I think click away, find your document numbers, and line up for passports and permits.
I'll include those links in the blurb for the podcast. How long do you think? Can you do this in under an hour?
Yes, it's really easy.
Okay.
Yeah.
So just get off
absolutely.
The guitar forums for an hour.
Right.
Fill out your passport, then get back on.
That's right. Stop talking about that the tree that was sunken in 1942 and it's at the bottom of a river, and then some special fish defecated on it. It's the best thing ever, Tonewood. Stop thinking about that. Get your passport. Then go back and talk about your wood.
Yeah. Cut down during a full moon.
right, exactly.
What do you think this does, you know, big picture to values of both Brazilian guitars and just regular rosewood guitars?
So I think there will be a blip at the start. People will be reluctant. Some buyers will be reluctant to purchase. I think over time, the economists would say what will happen is they'll adjust except for the cost of the permitting. You know, so there could be a few hundred dollars adjustment one way or the, you know, to increase just to cover the cost of permitting. But that, I think, is all. You know, economic analysis would tell us, well, it's a little bit more expensive now to conduct these transactions if they're across international borders. That expenses the cost of the permitting. I think that should be the only difference.
All right. Well, John, thank you as always for wading through the legal gobbledygook and translating it for us.
Always a pleasure. Once in a while, my legal training coincides with my love of guitars, my guitar geekdom, and I like doing it. I always like to help the other geeks out there in the world, too.
All right. I know you have a story coming up in our next issue. I know you've got a book that has nothing to do with guitars coming out eventually. Kalamazoo Gals is obviously alive and kicking and selling like gangbusters from what I see. What else is going on?
Well, the Kalamazoo Gals is crazily still going. A play based on it opens in April. There was a staged reading last year and won a contest. It will be a play based on it. And that's right, I have the piece coming out about Buddy Holly's Les Paul, the guitar that didn't change the world because he traded it in for a Strat early in his career. And I've got these Borderlands projects. I got two books on oral history projects along the U.S.-Mexico border. Probably most intriguingly, at least for me, I'm off to Egypt in a couple of weeks to interview former political prisoners. So life is interesting. And I will be taking a guitar.
Really? All right. With a passport.
With a passport, of course. Exactly.
All right, John. Thanks so much.
Always a pleasure. Take care, Jason.
Thanks. Bye.